Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Pettycast. We do it every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. We will power rank the power rankings an hour from now. Cannot wait to see what the experts are saying about the Texans after their win over the Bills. This is the segment, and we're getting some great texts, by the way. We'll read some of these, I promise you. 713-572-4610. What are you feeling petty about? Who did the best petty around the league this weekend? Seth and I will mix in some petty takes of our own. Let's start with the Colts. I feel like we're really good at being petty about the Colts. And yes. I'm going to tell you who I feel bad for right now. Not really, but sarcastically feel bad for. Colts Anthem Seth, who does this same thing every week. We've played him before.
I forgot his name was Seth.
His name's Seth. He's besmirching your good name. Here was his weekly anthem prior to the game against the Jags. We should point out that the Colts, going into this game in Jacksonville this weekend, had lost nine straight road games to the Jacksonville Jags. I'm assuming there's a London mixed in there. Nine straight road games to the Jags.
This is our Colts. This is our team. We bleed blue. This is our Colts. Whether win or lose, we love them. For the shoe, beat the Jags. Let's finally break that curse. Mm. This is our team. Go Colts.
Okay. So it's important for many of you at home. If you've never heard that song before, congratulations to you for not being on social media. Because it is, it's become almost like a rite of every NFL week this year for me to see Colts dude doing his at some point.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible not to see it multiple times as people just crush him and roast him for everything. And yet he seems like it's just a nice young fella doing a little
stuff. Pretty harmless.
He gets the Colts cheerleaders and mascots in on it sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my God, keep up the good work because. Yeah,
that's one of the weirder streaks that I've ever seen, that the Colts have lost 10 straight road games to the Jags. The Jags have been largely terrible in the last 10 years. And the Colts have not been one of the great teams in the NFL, but that does overlap with Andrew Luck. And, you know, they've had other quarterbacks in there who would seem capable of beating the Jags in a road game over the last decade.
What's the Texans streak versus the Jaguars now? It's that's also in Jacksonville, I think. The Texans in Jacksonville is on a really long
streak. It goes back to 2017. They lost in Jacksonville the year the Jags made the AFC title game. So
and that was the last time the Texans lost in Jacksonville.
In Jacksonville, yeah. So there you go. So the Colts anthem, poor Colts anthem guy, man. Poor Colts, poor Anthony Richardson, man. Joe Flacco is about to Deshaun Watson him again.
I guess, who are we being petty over here?
The Colts, or the guy? The Colts, both. Yeah, kind of both, but yeah.
Anthony Richardson, who's right now, as long as he stays injured, he's right above 50% completion percentage on the season. So a lot hangs in the balance whether he's healthy or not. I need him to finish at 49%.
Joe Flacco is the top-rated quarterback in the NFL. Anthony Richardson is the lowest-rated quarterback in the NFL. And Joe Flacco threw for 359 yards in a loss last week. I think we'll be petty over
just the whole scenario in
the whole scenario of the Colts. That the Colts are looking at a Cleveland Browns situation from last year. Poor Colts fans. And poor.
I wish Anthony Richardson seemed like a jerk, but he doesn't.
No, I know.
Seems like a really nice young man. I don't know, but for the whole Anthony Richardson situation, this feels good.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's do our weekly check-in on the Pettycast on the Deshaun Watson situation. They hate him in Cleveland right now.
You were cackling yesterday when I heard you listening to Cleveland radio.
It's so fun.
And you were cackling at just how miserable the host sounded.
Yeah, and I like those guys too, Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. But we went through a few years of it here, man. I'm just glad it's somebody else. And I love that it's a city that was taking a victory lap over getting Deshaun Watson for three first-round picks.
Look, I like you, but I laugh at your misfortune.
Of course.
Remember when your aunt died? I thought that was hilarious.
That didn't happen, just so people...
Were you going to take a day off of work, Sean?
Didn't happen. My aunt's still alive.
You can't come talk about sports.
No days off, man. Here was Deshaun...
That did not happen.
Here was Deshaun on his post-game press conference on Sunday.
I mean, we just got to continue to take what the defense give us, you know, at the end of the day, you know. So I'm rocking with whatever the coach's decision is. Like I said, we don't listen to the outside world, regardless of what it is. So, you know, that's all I can do is worry about what I can control.
He's got no answers, man. It's 9 minutes. It's 9 minutes of no answers. It's hilarious.
I have to put in my big box of advice to athletes on dealing with the media. Yeah. I'm amazed that football people don't understand this. Nobody ever feels better hearing take what the defense gives you when it's in a loss or in a poor performance. Man, people hate that. Yeah. They really hate it. It's one of those things that it is true, and yet it feels so passive and weak when you say, well, you should take what the deep. It's almost like, oh, like you're a little, like you're in a Dickens novel or something. Please, sir. Please, sir. Please, Mr. Spagnuolo. Could you give us something?
Can you spare a dime? Can you spare a penny?
Can you spare a blown coverage? Yeah. Can you? No.
Speaking of our friends on 92.3 The Fan, Daryl Ryder, who I believe covers the Browns for The Athletic. He's a weekly guest for them. And he was on yesterday, and he's saying, it's over.
It's over. Got 12 more weeks of this to go. It's over. Deshaun can't play at an elite level anymore. It's over with him. They made their bed. They got to sleep in it now. But I just complete, utter disaster and failure for the Cleveland Browns. Unprepared, disinterested at times. Confused at times. We've been trying to talk ourselves for 5 weeks into this thing's going to get better. They're going to get it on track. I think yesterday was the cold hard truth. They're not getting it on track. It's not going to get better. Kevin Stefanski doesn't have answers. The players don't have answers. The players I don't want to say they don't care, but they sure don't look like they care.
That sounds like a terrible situation.
You know, it's too bad. What has been an historically long stretch of an embarrassing incident involving Lake Erie, this is Lake Erie's biggest embarrassment. This is the mistake by the lake.
This is worse than the lake being lit on fire.
This is, anytime you make a joke about the mistake by the lake or the lake being on fire, people in Cleveland get all irate about it. Look, it's clean now. It's not that bad. Like, now they have Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
They'll never live down. This was one of the biggest mistakes in the history of pro football.
Huge gaffe. And he's now 2-1, the favorite to be the next QB benched. Deshaun Watson is the favorite at 2-1. One more on Deshaun here. This was we just heard from Terry Bradshaw a little bit ago. This is Terry Bradshaw. This is now them on the set on Sunday after Deshaun had a horrible performance against the Commanders. This was Terry Bradshaw's solution.
The question would be, as Kurt said, do you put Watson down now? He has not played well since he's been in Cleveland. Simply has not played well.
I don't want to put him down. I'd want to sit him.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. That was a little harsh.
I know what you meant. I know what you meant, Terry, okay?
Here, Gronk, I know what you meant, Terry.
I understand that reference. I understand that reference.
I speak fluent Northern Louisiana, too, Terry. That was funny. Put him down.
It's like the Browns fell in love with a hooker, married her with no prenup. Like, you're just like all the stuff that you're just like, man, what are you doing?
Oh my god.
Yeah, like somebody, remember that NFL player? Oh, it was a Titans player who fell in love with a stripper in Las Vegas and married her.
Yeah, we gotta Google that. Yeah, I do.
No prenup.
I do.
She like left. He did the old honey, I ain't coming home no more.
Yeah. 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 No, it wasn't Kahali Waring, okay? That's
So that's what the Browns did with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
They fell in love with a hooker.
Yep. From acknowledged last week, as we continue with the Pettycast, we'll read texts here in just a second. Podcast Bill got acknowledged last week. Bill O'Brien on the Julian Edelman podcast was awesome, telling stories. His team is 4-1, so he's feeling himself. He told this Gronk story last week.
I told this story about Gronk the other day. Gronk was a rookie, and Bill would come in on Wednesdays sometimes, and he would test the team.
Quiz us.
And as assistant coaches, you had a 7:30 meeting, so you would alert these guys like, hey, man, you better know your stuff because he's going to test you. And these guys would all be like, oh, my God. They'd be looking at the punter's range and averages and stuff. And let's say we're playing the Jets or whatever. And so he goes, all right, Gronkowski, who's the Mike linebacker? and Gronk had his scout book like between his feet. And so he looked at Bill and he looked down and he was moving the pages with his toes. And Bill goes, Jesus Christ, Gronk.
Okay, so it's good enough, Ben. So Bill's feeling himself. We acknowledged podcast Bill is great. He's fun. He's a good storyteller. Boston College went to Virginia, to Charlottesville, and got worked in the second half by what I'm assuming is at best an average UVA football team. Salty Bill is back. This is the first minute of his post-game press conference on Saturday.
Hi, Bill. Just comment on the penalties and turnovers.
Awful. Awful. Bad coaching, bad execution combined. Awful. Give Virginia credit. They did a great job. We did not do a good job. Thank God we got 12 days before our next game. Maybe we can get some things corrected. Bad. All the way around.
Go to Dan Rubin.
Coach, you did start out the first half with that fast start. Doesn't matter.
You got to play 60 minutes. It's not a 30-minute game. It was a 30-minute game. Great. It's not. It's 60 minutes. Next question.
Trevor Haas.
What did you see from Tommy specifically in the fourth quarter?
What's that?
What did you see from Tommy specifically in the fourth quarter?
It wasn't great. Nobody was great. Nobody was great, Trevor. Nobody. Coaches, we had 10 guys on the field on the last play, on the first play of the last drive on offense. It was terrible. We put it on me. Blame it all on me. We got to do a better job. We got to coach better. We got to play better. We got a long way to go.
I like that, Bill O'Brien. That's a good. That's good, saucy. Any kind of, that had tones of same methodology, different sentiment, but AFC South champs.
Yeah, that's like, right. That's
like, it was like it was
AFC South champions
it,
2 years in a row, Brian.
Yeah, except in a different direction. You know,
right,
instead
right.
of but basically being very dismissive. I like that. I think that plays well in Boston.
Yeah,
I think that's if that's my coach and he's done some good things with a team and maybe look like they're overperforming at times. That's what I want to see. I approve of that, Bill O'Brien.
I
right
do
there.
Too. It's a petty Bill O'Brien in some ways, and it's petty for me to be bringing Salty Bill and taking pleasure in Salty Bill being back because it equates to him losing football games. But that's what this segment's about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to get in trouble for not being petty enough. I don't know. I'm having a hard time figuring out who I'm supposed to be petty on towards today.
Well, I think merely taking pleasure in Bill O'Brien being angry is probably a petty act, and you and I are both taking pleasure in it
We're
right
kind
now.
Of acknowledging him for his pettiness.
A little bit. Yeah, for sure.
Doesn't matter what it looked like.
Text message. I'm petty about my son's little league 9-year-old assistant coach. His son is the worst kid on the team, and he keeps getting put at first and second base when he can't even catch.
Oh, that is the worst. I remember that. The worst year I ever had with that was the kid was the he was our ace pitcher. He's the worst player on the team, but he's a coach's son. You gotta have him out there. Yeah,
he's our stopper. He's gonna stop every winning streak that we have. This is from Michael Schwab texts in. I'm happily petty about the Dodgers and Yankees losing, especially when Profar tricked the Dodger fans about robbing a home run. Did you see that?
No.
Profar, the left fielder for the Padres, in the game that the Padres won over the weekend on Sunday, goes back. I forget who hit the ball, but leaps into that short little left field fence that they've got in Dodger State. So he glove goes into a crowd of human hands in there. And he pulls the glove back out and acts like he didn't catch it. So the Dodger, whoever hit it, was circling the bases like he hit a home run. And then he just turns around by the time the guy's between second and third. He's like, nope, I got it right here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's petty right there. Petty text, George Pickens snatching the face mask of that Cowboys DB. Not even mad considering it was a GA grad versus the Cowboys. So... Georgia grad. Okay, so Georgia grad. Yeah, Pickens went to Georgia. Did you see that play where Pickens...
That was one of those ones where I think... I think it was an effective tug. It wasn't like a flop or anything, but I bet Pickens didn't expect it to be such an effective tug.
Yeah.
I had a hard time getting angry up in arms over that one. I felt like he was just... Yeah, he was being petty and nasty, and it was kind of degrading and demeaning, but it blew up in his face because he was too good at it.
My petty...
It's like when you try to play a practical joke on somebody and you accidentally break their orbital bone.
Right. That's tough.
You know, time I did that and got suspended for it.
Yeah. My petty quip, text message, the announcer sniffing Josh Allen's jockstrap all game.
Was it bad?
I guess. I mean, according to this guy, I haven't had a chance to watch the TV copy yet. It was Ian Eagle and Charles Davis, right?
I've watched pieces of it. I just always usually listen to Charles Davis more so, just because he's so smart.
Yeah.
I haven't watched.
Allen's a good player. What do you expect him to do? I mean, I know he's having a horrible game, but he's a really good player. I have one more petty here. Russell Wilson is a total dork. This is from the Sunday night game between the Steelers and the Cowboys. We learned this little thing about Russell Wilson and something he's added to his repertoire with the Steelers.
Mike, Russell Wilson, as you know, he injured his calf in training camp, re-aggravated it prior to week one. He told me he ramped it up in practice this week, participating in all the quarterback drills, said he felt great, and he should be ready to go next week. He stressed it's a long season, wants to make sure he's 100%, saying he's very close. Once he's back on the field, get ready for another one of his signature catchphrases. We've heard, go Hawks, let's ride here in Pittsburgh. It will be win the 7th.
All right. So that'll be the end of the year.
You're such a tool. Oh, he had Go Hawks. He had Let's Ride with the Broncos. And now, apparently, Seth, he's going to finish every press conference with Win the 7th.
Oh.
That would be the 7th Super Bowl for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I couldn't hear. All right.
Win.
That's catchy, I guess.
The 7th. No, it's not.
I'm trying to figure out what the logic behind any of that is. Like, Win the 7th. It's such a misfit between him and the city of Pittsburgh.
Oh my God!
I can't imagine there's a single Pittsburghian. Pittsburgher? What are they called?
I don't know.
Pittsburghite.
Yeah, no, they're Yinzers. They're Yinzers.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I can't imagine there's a single Yinzer that's like, oh yeah, this doesn't feel like a guy just trying to glom on to all of our previous.
Win
glory
the
or
7th. Is anybody saying that up there?
Pandering to me. Win the 7th.
Win the 7th. He's such a tool. God, he's the worst. That was a good.
Does Russell Wilson think that he's just penciled in as the starter when he's healthy?
Apparently he. At the very least, he's coming up with catchphrases for his press conferences.
Is that where it is though? It's not clear cut, right? They haven't definitively said that when he's healthy, he's the guy.
No. I think people feel like it's leaning that way though, just based on Steelers have lost a couple games now. The offense has been really the offense was bad when they were winning games. Early in the season. All right. There's your petty cast. Keep texting in. I'm enjoying reading how I didn't realize how many petty people we have out there. I love this. 713-572-4610. Similarities. Are we out of bounds for pointing out similarities between the Houston Texans and the defending Super Bowl champs? We'll let you guys be the judge based off of last night's Monday night game and the Texans win over the Bills. That is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we preface this by saying we're not saying the Texans are the Chiefs. The Chiefs are the two-time defending Super Bowl champions. Texans has never made it to an AFC title game. We get that. But I think, Seth, you and I had a similar reaction in watching the Chiefs beat the Saints last night, but really more so in watching the way the Texans have operated this season and the way the Chiefs have largely operated, not just this season, but last season as well, really ever since Steve Spagnuolo got there as a defensive coordinator, is that, Patrick Mahomes is the face of that franchise, and he's the guy making big plays on offense for them when they need it to win all these games. But defense has kind of become just as much a calling card for the Chiefs as Patrick Mahomes is on the offensive side of the ball. And this Texans team so far, while CJ has had, I think, a good year, not a great year, but a good year, the Texans defense has been very, very good, and especially very, very good in a complimentary fashion in getting the ball back for the offense the last couple weeks.
They're actually doing way better defensively in terms of DVOA than I thought they would. Where are they, Sean? I looked
fourth.
It up before.
They're fourth.
They're fourth. Yeah. Fourth in DVOA, which there's something that doesn't quite 100% match up there. I think the biggest thing is that because the pass rush hasn't been as fearsome as we expected, it's kind of like the receivers on offense.
Yeah.
You're feeling like, oh, God, there's something untapped here. But they've been playing, they've been getting pressure, they've been making quarterbacks uncomfortable, and they've been playing good coverage to the point where, they're making it really hard for offenses to operate. I think the reason it doesn't feel like as good of a defense as it could be is that they haven't been taking balls away a lot at all. And that's where the opportunistic side of things and the thing that leads to landslide victories a lot of times ends up being turnovers, and the Texans just haven't been that opportunistic. So it just feels like you're sitting on untapped potential still with the defense.
Yeah, well, and you theoretically, it would be compounded by the fact that CJ and the offense have been a little bit more careless with the ball this year. You know, CJ's already thrown, he's thrown, at this time last year, he had yet to throw an interception. He's thrown three already this year, and he fumbled a ball deep in his own territory last week.
And that's where, I think, again, with the Texans and the Chiefs being somewhat similar, they're both -3 or -4 in turnover ratio. Yeah. It's just the kind of stuff that no matter how good you are or who you are as an NFL team, that it's hard to overcome negative turnover ratios and look like you're really humming on all cylinders.
They've had some really, I think, kind of guys stepping up performance-wise, and I think one of them has been Henry Toa-Toa. So I think Toa-Toa has been really nice as that second linebacker as Christian Harris deals with whatever this long lingering injury is of his. And by the way, for those who missed it, Christian Harris will not be activated this week, so he's out for another week. He's really only participated in one practice this whole year, including training camp. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Henry Toa-Toa so far this year.
Henry has done a really great job. Henry had one of his better games this past week. He's playing physical. He's playing fast, just all over the field. So encouraged with his growth and his improvement. Coach Davis has done a great job with helping his development.
Yeah, and I think with Christian Harris, if he ever did come back, it's interesting. It's not, I don't feel about the linebackers like in the way that I might have predicted I would in July, where I was kind of waiting with Toa-Toa because, man, I wasn't super excited about what he did his rookie year. He came back and he's been a completely different guy. As he said, he called himself fat last year. That's not me saying it. That's what he said. He said I was fat or I was tubby, whatever he said. He just looks like a sleeker, more athletic guy, and he's playing with a lot more confidence and decisiveness. And he's been good, but I still, you look at the way they're divvying up reps on defense, and there's times where, man, it would be really nice to have three linebackers out on the field.
Yeah.
But they really only feel comfortable with Henry Toa-Toa and Azeez Alshire. And they're playing a nickel a lot with Jalen Petrie basically as your third linebacker. They're going to do that a lot regardless, but, man, there's times where they need three linebackers out there, and they haven't felt confident doing it. So with Christian Harris coming back, it's not – before the season, I would have said, oh, yeah, they need Christian Harris back because he's better than Henry Toa-Toa. Now I'd say, like, no, they just need three good linebackers out on the field at times.
What have you thought of Petrie this year so far?
Petrie is, like, exactly, I think he's got weaknesses in man coverage that good teams are going to be able to figure out and try to exploit. A team like the Jaguars just doesn't have enough guys to exploit it. But as, like, as a nickel linebacker, I like him a lot. Like, I think he plays run well relative to his size. But then there's other times out there too where, all right, man, they're just, when he's out there playing linebacker, they're just too light. They're just, their front seven is too light and they're getting pushed around a little bit.
Here's D'Amico Ryans on the physicality of the two starting corners, Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamar Lassiter.
Yeah, the emphasis for us is anybody who steps in and plays on our defense, you have to play physical. So whether you're a corner, safety, nobody gets a pass. Like, you have to play physical to play in our defense. So Stingley, he stepped up yesterday, played well. I think he had like seven tackles, and Kamari had a physical hit as well there. So that's what we're about. When your corners are playing physical, when your receivers are playing physical, that's the makings of a physical football team.
Okay, this is what cropped up last week that concerns me is that they looked sloppy in their tackling. And this is something that, you know, they focused on it during training camp. Sometimes when you get into in-season, some of the attention to detail on some of that stuff starts to wane a little bit as you're focusing more on scheme, because they were sloppy. Some of the missed tackles. Jalen Petrie had a missed tackle that I'm like, man, Jalen Petrie 3.0 wasn't doing that early in the season. You know, obviously Lassiter had the missed tackle on Keon Coleman, and they were big. These were all big moments. Be physical, get hard hits, but also just do the simple and the easy stuff well, too.
Mm-hmm. Azeez Alshire, you may have said this, he missed a tackle early in the game on James Cook. Yep. That was a big one. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Azeez Alshire's performance on Sunday.
Azeez, it was a valiant effort by Azeez to deal what he was dealing with. I can't imagine how he was feeling and what he was going through the night before the game. You know, it was a tough spot for him. So, man, couldn't be more proud of him for stepping up, right, and going out, gutting it out for the team. And as I spoke about Rob earlier, it's the same for Aziz. It's the team first mentality. It wasn't about him. He didn't want to make it a big deal about him. He just wanted to go out and help the team. And he had some nice plays there for us. Wish he would have came down one of those interceptions, but he had a really nice game for us.
He was good,
yeah,
man.
The two potential interceptions. Oh,
yeah. The first one, I have a hard time getting mad at, just because he's. I mean, that he
whipped around right at the last moment, yeah, on that one, right? Yeah.
That he had the athleticism to run step for step with that tight end down the seam is impressive unto itself. And Aziz can move. The second one would have been huge because that was the one where Josh Allen rolling to his right. Tried to kind of do what CJ's done with Nico a few times this year, which is rolling to your right, rolling to your right. You got one blade of grass left, and you throw it back across the field. Hit him right in the hands.
Yeah.
Hit him right in the hands. That would have set them up with nice field position right there. But hard to compare.
And then I guess whichever illness it was, hopefully for Aziz Alshire, it was just a stomach bug of some sort, and it's gone, and it's not something that's going to be lingering. That's the kind of thing you can gut your way through for one game, but then if all of a sudden it's a weeks-long ailment, that's a whole different deal.
Yeah, we still got some crumbs coming in on the text page from the Pettycast in the previous segment. Mm-hmm. Someone says, Deshaun was good with O'Brien. Go hire him. They got to fire the coach. $230 million. Might as well try it. Does Deshaun's performance in Cleveland, which has been abysmal since he got there, and they've been trying to pigeonhole him into this... the Coop Shanahan offense, and it's not working. So that's been a big topic up there, is they're rejiggering the offense to be more Deshaun friendly, which is now outside of Stefanski's kind of knowledge base. Mm-hmm. Does Deshaun's performance here versus how it's been in Cleveland make you feel differently about Bill O'Brien as a coach?
No, because I knew that Deshaun really liked Bill O'Brien's offense, and in 2020 was really starting to come into his own with it. And that wasn't even with Bill O'Brien. It was with Tim Kelly for most of the year.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make me feel differently about it. I think pretty much the standard sentiment people have in Houston right now about Bill O'Brien is, you know what? Give him credit for being he's not an atrocious NFL head coach, but he's a horrible general manager.
Yeah.
And I think that you could make an argument for him in Cleveland, especially what Tim Kelly's a tight ends coach with the Giants right now.
That's right.
Could they pry him away from the Giants to
get
be the offensive coordinator?
Get the band back together, baby. Yeah.
I could make a really good argument for hiring Bill O'Brien head coach, Tim Kelly offensive coordinator, since you are stuck with Deshaun.
You're stuck.
If you got to do everything you can to try to recapture something here, all right, well, let's go get the guys that at least have had shown promise and progress at one point in time.
$172 million on the cap they still have committed to him after this year. After this year.
I feel like Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly, that dynamic duo, that might be the only reasonable choice right now.
You can make an argument for it.
They traded for him based on what they had seen him done,
yes,
mostly with Bill O'Brien / Tim Kelly.
Entirely,
all right, well, go for it. Because we're screwed anyway, so let's just go for it.
Yeah.
Now the question is, all right, who's your GM? Can Bill O'Brien actually coexist with an NFL GM?
With an NFL GM.
Yeah.
I see enough interviews with O'Brien since he got up to Boston. And I don't know what they're paying him at BC. It's not an NFL coach's head salary, I'm sure. But I do wonder, especially given the fact that Bill's got his son Jack, who's got extremely special needs for what afflicts him. You know, he's got lissencephaly, which is a brain condition. That they're near doctors that they know, that they're near family up there. Both their families are from up there.
Yeah,
it's an interesting hypothetical. Like, if Bill O'Brien were offered an NFL job again, would he take it, provided he's succeeding at BC? Like, we just heard audio from him in the previous segment. He's miserable when he loses, and he's going to lose some more games this year, you know?
The long play would be, how long does Jerod Mayo last in New England?
Oh, in New England?
And then there's still a whole lot of uncertainty there, too, because you got Vrabel waiting in the wings and everything else. So, I wonder.
Is Deshaun reparable? Can he be repaired at this point? Is he just completely broken? He might be broken.
Yeah,
man.
I think he might be completely broken.
He might be broken.
And whatever led him to live his life the way he was living, and just all the stuff that comes after it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think he might just be... Kid's just not right in the head no more.
No, that's a good way to put it.
It's a medical diagnosis.
All right, we're going to get to some Texans talk in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll power rank the power rankings. What are the experts saying about the Texans? We'll do that at 9 o'clock. Early storylines on this Patriots game coming up on Sunday. We'll get to that. I love when people reinvent themselves. You know, you get fired from a job, and instead of just cowering in the corner, you go back and you find a way to reinvent yourself. This might be my favorite reinvention of a fired head coach that I've ever watched on the internet before. And trust me, the audio will be good. We'll set the scene with the video, too. This is really funny stuff, and it's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, John Gruden has become one of the more entertaining. I'll call him an analyst. Obviously, former head coach, former voice of Monday Night Football. He had a great run on Monday Night Football. I always enjoy Gruden on there. He has really started, Seth, to kind of leverage social media to get him back out there, you know, get him back out there doing things. And I don't know how much of his chalk talks that you've watched on Twitter and whatnot.
I watched him do the preview of the Texans versus the Bears.
Yeah.
And it was cool because it was him, a half hour of him just in front of a whiteboard with no video or anything, just him being himself. And it was kind of cool. It was like he had a crazy coach getting you ready from back in the day before there was film.
Yeah.
I liked it.
And
I liked it.
He's cracking corny jokes. And
he does. Yeah. The one thing that's hard is whenever I watch him do my own team, you have to not fall for the seduction of basically him acting like every guy he talks about is a future all-star.
It's amazing.
You know,
yeah.
He acts like every guy on the team is like, just guys, oh, I really love this guy. Yeah. It's incredible. Yeah. And it's seductive. You want to believe his sweet little lies.
You're right. No, every Gruden QB camp, that feature that he used to do when he was at ESPN, had you thinking that we were on the cusp of this new wave of amazing quarterbacks.
And that we would hear about for the next 5 years.
Yes.
When anybody, you know, would say like, oh, well, I'll have you know that John Gruden said that this guy was the next Johnny Unitas.
Right.
And you're like, oh, this is, okay, all right.
Okay, so you got to take a listen to this. And this is what I want you to picture, everybody, because this is what's happening in this video that we're about to play. We're going to play the audio from it. This is Gruden sharing some of his thoughts on quarterbacks and the like around the NFL. But I need you to picture him sitting in a dark room in his office, sitting in front of a computer, a laptop or a desktop. I'm not sure what it was, but it's completely dark. The camera is facing Gruden, so it's the back of the monitor facing Gruden. So the only light in the room is the light that you get from the screen. So it looks, he looks pretty psychotic.
No, and he's sweating.
And
he's sweating too.
Sweating and he's swaying too.
Like
He looks deranged.
It looks like he's just, you know, done 9 lines of coke. He looks like he's not in a good place. Yeah.
Yes.
But he's very happy. He's very excited.
Seems very happy. Okay, so with that visual in mind, take a listen.
You know, when I was calling plays, I just loved it when our quarterback shredded the defense. I mean, just ripped them. That's what has me feeling really nicey. Like watching Jared Goff go 18 for 18, 292 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Got me feeling nicey.
I couldn't do that pregame warm-up. Ha! Jaden Daniels, just a rookie. 26 out of 30, 87%. 231 yards. He rushes for 47. He's doing everything. Shredded, baby. CJ Stroud, 345 yards. Brings the Texans back. Wins it at the buzzer. Shred him, Stroud. Baker Mayfield coming off a tough loss. 345 yards in the hot, humid Tampa Bay weather. Heat them up, Mayfield. Keep shredding them, baby. Woo! Sam Darnold. Who'd have thought the Vikings would be 4-0? 275 yards, 3 touchdowns. Go to Lambeau Field and win again, baby. Keep it rolling, Sam. Shred them.
I like how.
Okay. You know what, though?
Thank you for leaving the TikTok sound in there at the end, too, Ben.
Honestly, though, okay, take CJ Stroud out of that and everything I said about Gruden, where a guy just blows all these guys up and everything. So if that were. Now, if you said 2 years ago, like, hey, in a couple years, Gruden's going to make his way onto the internet, and he's going to be blowing up players like Jared Goff, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, I'd be like, yeah, same old Gruden, just making something out of nothing. Like, no, it's like he's got legitimate reason to get excited about all this.
He's kind of right. Yeah, he's kind of right. It's funny.
Two years ago, Jared Goff.
Go find the video, man. If you ever aspire to be on the internet, and I don't know that any of you out there can bring that type of Gruden energy, and I'm guessing none of you have the knowledge base and experience that Gruden has to where his opinions have the credibility. But in terms of production value, brother just sat down right there in front of a laptop and turned it on and turned all the rest of the lights off in the room and started swaying back and forth. And you said like he's on cocaine?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like he might. I don't want to put that on him. I don't want to put that Jabril Peppers vibe on him or anything. But that is an unhinged Gruden right there.
It's impressive in that it is just him. They weren't showing, at least the one I watched, they weren't showing like any video overlay with highlights or anything, right? It's the same way a really good stand-up comedian can get up and they don't need visuals or a light show or anything else like that. It's just it's a guy in a microphone and that's all you need. He's not a prop comic or anything like that.
Right.
He's doing that with nothing but him and his personality and his opinions, and it's not even really his opinions. It's him getting excited about
Stroud.
It's an impressive charisma that he has.
It's one of my more enjoyable reinventions that we've seen out there of like fired head coaches to broadcaster or whatever he is now. I don't even, is he a broadcaster? Is he a streamer, I guess,
he's
right?
He's an influencer.
He's an influencer, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, that was fun.
that's not nearly what it used to be. Like, it used to say, like, guy's on the internet now. Now people are like, oh, does he have Silicon Valley backing? Because he's on the internet now. He's probably going to sell his show for $40 million next year. But he's a real loser because he's not working 19 hours a day on ESPN.
You think he's making money off this thing right now? He's only been doing it for like a month. You think he's got backers on this thing? Yeah. Probably so. Text message. Sean, you said whatever the...
If he's not, then he's got like an end towards it as far as just...
Yeah.
The amount of money that you can make on YouTube right now is absurd.
Yeah, I should say, I meant yet.
Kind of presence.
Yeah, I meant yet. He's going to make money off it for sure. How can you pettycast and not mention that Aaron Judge now has a higher strikeout rate in the postseason than Martin Maldonado? That's a great... Did you see that graphic?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Good job. Yes. Good.
Yes. We should have been petty about that in the petty cast. Text message. Sean, you said whatever the injury is with Christian Harris, why doesn't the team have to tell us what's wrong with him? Or put another way, why do they not want to tell us what's wrong with him? That's Chuck in Denver. Well, they've listed it as a calf.
Yeah.
I think we're where there's frustration or concern, maybe a combination of those two things, is the fact that this is really a long, lingering calf injury. I mean, this thing's been going back to the end of, like, middle of July.
Right, yeah, so we don't get a lot of details about it. And just the team doesn't have to give details, and it doesn't become a HIPAA thing or anything. They're not going to give any more details than they need to. But it's, I don't know, I guess, Chandler Rome with the Astros gets very upset about the fact that the Astros don't give that many details on stuff. I don't share the same. I feel that's the way a lot of pro sports teams operate. They don't want to give out any more information than they have to, and it's frustrating as a fan. But I always come back to, like, I guess at the end of the day, it's not like it doesn't actually help us to know whether a guy, like, exactly what a guy's injury is or exactly what the details are.
Yeah. I would just...
Just frustrating.
No, well, and with Harris, it's just, one, I can't remember a calf injury like this where the guy's just been out, other than one practice, he's been out for months and months and months. I guarantee you there's some out there that are like that. I just can't remember one. And I'm just curious if he's coming back. That's one of the... If and when he's coming back.
Well, okay, this is the part that's uncomfortable and that people don't like, and they think the team is hiding something from them. They don't know. Like, that's the whole problem is people, because of television or something else, have this expectation that, like, teams know exactly what's going on with the injuries all the time. Mm-hmm. And the flat out fact of the matter is, like, when they say an injury could be 2 to 8 weeks, it's because they don't know how long it could take.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't, Like, it's just frustrating. And there's, when somebody doesn't have any answers that can give you any concrete answers or anything, I guess it gets frustrating. But I don't hold the Texans or the Astros or anybody else to the flames necessarily when they might themselves very well not know exactly when Christian Harris is coming back.
Someone says,
I guess the people think that teams are just saying, like, in their minds, they're like, well, we know he's coming back in 7 weeks, but we're not going to tell anybody. The vast majority of the time, they genuinely don't know.
And the example you bring up is super specific right there. I think there is a frustration and especially with the Astros, that the team knows way more than they're letting on, you know, yeah. For fans. And fans feel like they have a right to know, and I don't know that that's the case, I guess, necessarily.
I just lean towards the side of, I think sometimes when people say they don't know, they don't know.
They don't know.
And it's just, it's not, and like having a little bit more detail on the injury at the end of the day doesn't do anything for anybody. So I think on the side, I always side on the side of gamesmanship. So
sure.
Teams just keeping things close to the vest because that's what they do. I'm okay with that.
All right, we power rank the power rankings. This might be the best week of power rankings we've got for the Houston Texans so far, coming off a massive win over the Buffalo Bills. Where do the experts rank your Houston Texans? We will do that coming up next.